The following episode of the Double After Hours podcast was originally recorded on April 12th, 2025. Double After Hours podcast. Take one.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to a very apocalyptic edition of the Double After Hours podcast. I know. Crazy.
I don't have a joke on this one. This is just a good show.
Yeah, it is. Good show, good game. It's based on, heck yeah, all around. Love it.
We're gonna do a little bit of double play with the show and the game, for what it sounds like, and I can't wait for that. But before we get into that, let's introduce what the heck we are.
What the heck I am? I am human too.
Oh my god, it's a clicker! No! Aaron! The studio just starts getting destroyed.
It's a bloater!
No! Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Oh, that right there's the bloater. Ooh.
Ah,
oh,
chill. But
ooh, that theme song. Ooh.
Oh, we're in a better place now. It's okay.
We're in a very, very much a better place. Thank you, Bryce,
very better place
for the theme song. Appreciate it. He's not.
Where
here,
is he?
Anyway. Yeah. what's your name, Bryce? Thanks, Bryce.
All right, the clickers got him. They got Shane, too.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to the secret dungeon.
And by clickers, I mean they're playing Marvel Rivals right now, and I'm so mad.
My God.
Listen, it's a great game. I've put over 100 hours into it already, but oh my God. Guys, we have things to do.
Yeah, we have business to attend to, but nope.
Speaking of business.
Yes.
I never introduced myself.
Yeah, let's
I never
get down
did.
To business. That's right. I'm Aaron.
Hi, guys.
Yeah. who's going first?
You.
Okay. Hi, I'm Aaron Gresser. I'm the ringleader of this nonsense. And I'm here with...
Hello, I'm Charlie. I run the socials, I make the thumbnails, I write the descriptions, I make all the funny visual stuff that you see. I also edit the gameplay videos, and we just put out a Madagascar one like a couple weeks ago. That one was pretty funny. I don't think I've ever seen Aaron so distraught, so honestly, for that reason alone, you should watch it, but yeah.
Part two is going to be hoo-hoo boy.
There's a lot of dead air in that one, but I got to edit it down. I can figure it out.
Yeah. That's
good. I just remember how much I was crying over like one stage where you're playing as Marty and like he's like being blown back by the wind.
No! Why? I can't be nothing! You can be nothing!
I gotta say, Aaron's really been coming up with a lot of catchphrases in these last few weeks.
I have. It's a little scary. I don't know why, but hey. Maybe it's a lack of sleep. I don't know. But anyways, today we are talking about Last of Us. And
what? The show?
The show. Yes, the show, not the game, but I love the game. It's based on the game.
We might play the game eventually.
Heck yeah.
We'll see.
We got the poster.
We've been kicking that around for a while.
Absolutely. Got the poster on the wall. Actually, they just released the complete edition. It's got both part one and part two. It's like, was it like $90 or something?
I think it was Jesus criminy. These are like 5 or 6 year old. Well, the sequel is at least 5 years old because it came out in 2020.
Right. Actually,
and then like I don't even remember. The first one came out at the end of the PS3's lifespan. So that's like what, 2013?
Oh, sweet Jesus. The Last of Us Complete Collector's Edition is $109.99. Is this for the physical or is this for digital? Okay, it's for physical, so you get like posters and you get some like other kind of.
Oh, okay. You can get the ear that was ripped off in the show on the dungeon floor. That's the big special novelty.
Yeah, you get. You get cover art. You get a steelbook, and you get some
steelbook.
Love steelbooks. Okay.
I mean, I think they're cool, but like, listen, if it's between $20 Blu-ray and like a $50 steelbook, I'm picking the $20 Blu-ray. I'm sorry. It's like, I got food to buy. I can't.
Yeah, Ray, we got food to buy. It's fine.
And with The Last of Us specifically, that's in limited supply because, well, gang, so why are we doing this episode? Why are we talking about The Last of Us? I mean, we could make the easy answer and say, well, the season two is coming out or probably has already premiered when this comes out. And, you know, it's like, we got to jump on that bandwagon. We got to jump on that hype train because, you know, Last of Us Season 1, obviously, it's like, in my opinion, the best video game adaptation of all time.
Heck
like,
yeah.
I can't think of a better one. But also, and I'm not trying to discredit any of the people who worked on this show, but I think it had the easiest road to get there, if that makes sense, because The Last of Us Season 1, which is based on the first game, obviously, no duh, is like probably one of the best narrative-driven games of all time. It was so good that when it came out at the end of the PS3's lifespan, people were buying PS3s right before the PS4 dropped. Right. Like, it's that good of a game. It totally changed how PlayStation was viewed in that console war.
Heck yeah.
And when I say all that, I say this in the sense of, I think this show is incredible, but I also think that it's kind of being built on the back of the fact that its game is incredible. It's not like you're taking an abstract thing like, I don't know, Mario. And even though Mario has a ton of different stories, you know, like, it, like we, there's not really an easy direction to point at and go, that's the Mario movie I want to make. Or the Sonic movies, as fun as they are, where it's like, sure, as Sonic 3 took a lot of inspo from Sonic Adventure 2, and obviously the second one took a lot of inspiration from 2 and 3, and then the first one was Pop.
Yeah.
you know.
It was Hop. It's always Hop.
You know, it's all... Listen. Move this. It's a copycat industry. Just has Minecraft copied Jumanji, Sonic copied Hop. We all know this. Heck, I'm going to guarantee you there's going to be a scene in Avengers Doomsday where James Marsden's Cyclops comes back and he's going to be sitting in a car with Rocket Raccoon because we have to keep doing the cycle. It's very important.
Oh, yeah.
But I say all this in saying that I think this show had probably the easiest path to being good compared to a lot of video game stuff that gets adapted.
Oh yeah.
Not in the sense that Last of Us is like the easiest property to replicate, but it's like perfect for HBO, you know? Like it has right. The tone you would expect from an HBO show. Like it's just one of these properties that fits so seamlessly that it's why I call it HBO's easiest masterpiece. Because it's like compared to something like Game of Thrones or Sopranos where like even if Game of Thrones kind of fell off at the end. But, yeah. Like, when are we going to do Game of Thrones? I don't know, man.
Sopranos didn't even fall off. It just stopped abruptly at the end.
And then they made a movie that wasn't very good.
Yay, the HBO way.
The HBO way. Phenomenal start, awful finish.
I'm hoping Last of Us is not like that. I don't think it will.
Righteous Gemstones, I'm praying. But
come on now.
Come on now, HBO. Season 4 of what I've seen so far, you got that season from the back.
Don't lie to me, HBO.
HBO, you are like one of the most consistent production companies in Hollywood. I swear to God, if you screw this up. But anyway, but all that to say, I think it's a wonderful show. I'm very, because Aaron's played the game. I haven't. Yes. Like, I've always wanted to play the game, and I just I've been an Xbox and Nintendo kid, so I never had the PlayStation, so I play all my PlayStation stuff at other people's houses, because I'm a leech, but...
Well, you're welcome anytime to come over, and we'll play Last of Us.
All right, thanks, Aaron. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy that a friendship extends me on this podcast. Thank Christ. Oh my God.
Oh, good Lord.
No, I mean, like, I'm just thinking about, like, how many times I've played PlayStation games, not at my house, but, like, at everyone else's house. One of my childhood best friends, he had PlayStation. You have PlayStation. A girl that I'm has PlayStation. Like, it's just it's like I'm the problem. Which I am. It's why I'm here. But like, whatever. Right. Aaron, I've been rambling.
You have been rambling. Well, I love Last of Us the game. I've played it. Did I ever finish Last of Us? No, I don't think I think I came very close, but I did not finish the entire game. So, you know, hate me.
Like 100% complete or the story?
I have finished story, but like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, like 100%. No, I'm not big into the 100%ing, mostly because I don't have time.
I'm not either.
Like, it's just like, okay, I did the story. Yay. Because another good example is Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I've been playing.
I haven't downloaded. I haven't started it yet.
It is a phenomenal game, and there is... Oh God, it's Bethesda, so of course there's like so much crap to do, and I do some of the extra crap, and then the most of it's like, whatever, you know. Okay, I missed it. We'll catch on the rebound, and the rebound never happens. Usually,
God.
It usually the game goes back in the bin, and we move on with our lives.
goes back to the Steam library and everything goes wrong.
That's right. Yeah, it stays in the deep dark corner. There's a few other games like that. But with Last of Us, I've played the remaster on PS4, and the game is stunning, the story is excellent, and I was really interested when they announced that they were doing a show adaptation, and I can't remember if at the time I did not have HBO Max, or now it's just called Max, yes.
Right. They've changed, like, the color scheme of it two times now. Like, it used to be purple, then it was blue, and now it's black. I liked it when it was purple. Like, what the... It was, like, distinct, like, okay. Like, think about how many streaming services are, like, blue. Disney Plus, Paramount, Amazon, you're cooked. Think about how many streaming services are black. Apple TV, that's the big one.
Yeah.
There's BritBox, maybe. I don't know. There's, like, a bunch of them that are kind of, like, that color.
BritBox is kind of easy.
Is it? I don't remember. I don't know why BritBox was my gut example. I just, like, I thought of it. It was, like, that's a black one, right? I don't know. Yeah. But...
Red Bull TV? I don't know.
I don't know, man. That stupid ass, like, fantastic TV crap. They play the Buffalo Wild Wings where people are getting their groins hit by drivers or something. I don't know, man. Yeah, awesome fail, TV. Fail is that Army? What it's called?
Fail Army TV or something? I don't know.
Yeah, Fail Army TV, where it's like you go to, like, the We Are Young Millennial Pizza Shop and they're playing that nonsense in the back. Get it out of here. Because I know what I want to eat when I see when I'm eating a calzone. People watching their balls get destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Now that we're men.
We can do anything.
So yeah, I don't remember if I had HBO Max at the time or not, but I just remember when they announced the show, I was excited for it, and I didn't watch it at all. I never watched it. So I have seen most of the show. I know that's kind of weird because we're all talking about the show today, and it's like, oh, Aaron, you haven't watched the entirety of the show. Get out! So I might not be qualified, but I have seen most of it, so I can form an opinion on it, and I have played the game, so I understand the story, and of course we're going to get into a quick synopsis later. But from what
we don't do synopsis for TV shows, you know that.
Oh, that's right. We're not doing... That's right. Quick synopsis is going to the bin today.
Yeah, quick synopsis will return. Give it an episode or two.
So, but yeah, I have enough to form an opinion. And quick thoughts before we get into, you know, what we're at, you know, the more detailed stuff.
Wheelio Dealio.
I do like the show. I think it was a really good adaptation. There's a few things I don't like about it. We'll get into it. There's a few differences between the game and stuff. One of them that's immediately coming to mind. But yeah, other than that, I think it's a great show, and we'll dig deeper into it and kind of rip it open and give some thoughts.
All right. Cool. Well, let's get started, because we got a few things on this wheel, but I have a feeling we might diverge into a couple of different topics while we're at it.
I'm sure.
But
there's going to be some...
As we do.
There's going to be some sub stuff, too. So, well, actually, I think we're going to start off really strong, because kind of like talking about the world building and how the show kind of handles the apocalypse and the beauty of it.
Yeah,
which I think is very interesting. I really do. Do you want to go first, or you want me to?
No, you go.
Okay. So I really like that the way that they handled the apocalypse in this one, where it's not like, you know, there's just this, you know, massive viral infection, and it just like it gets everybody, and then, you know, you're on your own, right, in this crazy place. I'm looking at you, Walking Dead. Spicy. I don't entirely hate The Walking Dead. I've seen a little bit of it, but it's definitely not.
You should play at least the season one of the Telltale series. Like, that's a great like story driven game.
And I love Telltale stuff, so you know.
We might play some Telltale stuff this year.
Heck,
we'll see.
Yeah. Back to the Future Telltale? Yes. Woo! But I like that this one kind of felt very unique with the whole, like, the whole fungus thing. And I don't know. It was just kind of an interesting way of looking at it, where you have this this fungus, which actually is a real thing. And, you know, that it's just it's taking over people, and that, you know, everything's all kind of divided up in, like, sections, I guess. And there's, like, the former military that's like become its own thing.
Good old
now.
Fedra.
Yeah, good old Fedra. It's becoming its own thing. And I don't know. I just think it's a really cool way of handling it. And oh my gosh, I know we'll get into it a little bit later, but I really like the zombies and the monsters and like the clickers and the bloaters.
Yeah.
It's very cool. So
they're very unique. Yeah. And I guess on that note, because I always describe The Last of Us as like in the same way I describe Guardians of the Galaxy to a similar extent. Crazy comparison. You got to hear me out.
Okay.
As soulfully sad, if that makes sense. It never feels like it's trying to be sad for shock.
Right.
If that makes sense. It's not like, even if I do enjoy The Boys as a TV show, a lot of what that show does is inherently for some kind of shock value.
Yes.
In that sense.
Very cool.
Mainly because that's how the comics did it, and they're trying to kind of do that there here. But sure. With Last of Us, it always felt like when it was trying to be sad and poignant, it was doing it for a point, you know? Mm-hmm. I keep thinking of the moment, because one thing that I love about this season is that of how much it compares Joel and Ellie's relationship to all the other characters they run into.
Right.
Like, was it Henry? And I forgot the other kid's name. It's the brother duo where there's the older brother who's the more responsible one and the deaf kid. I forgot their names.
Was
but
it Henry and Max?
They showed up. Something like that. Like, no. I want to say Sam and Max, but that's the dog and the bunny. I know
that's
not
that. That's a different thing.
We should play Sam and Max. That would be great. But anyway.
I got all those too.
Awesome. But my point is that it's Henry and it's like Henry and Max or something like that. And I keep thinking of the moment where, you know, like Ellie thinks that she can save the deaf kid with her blood because that's the whole plot point about her. We're like, oh, she's immune to clickers and such.
Sam. It was Henry and Sam.
Henry and Sam. I was there. And, you know, he tries to save him because he got bit, and then he wakes up in the morning and they got to put him down.
Right.
And then the brother, unfortunately, loses his own life to his circumstances. Have to say it like that for YouTube. But
sure.
I have always appreciated how this show is willing to ask the hard questions about what an apocalypse would do to people, which seems silly because there's so much like zombie and apocalypse media out there. Like, obviously, we just brought up The Walking Dead and how it handles things there. But with The Walking Dead, it always felt like the main, at least in like some of the less good Walking Dead media that I've consumed, it always felt like the conflict there was from the walkers themselves instead of like the humans. And I know that's not inherently 100% true. Obviously, there's characters like Negan and a bunch of other guys who like are challenges for the survivors to actually handle. But it feels like with The Last of Us, so much of the main plot of this show is about Joel and Ellie like making their way to like figure out what the heck they can actually do. Mm-hmm. And the clickers are just a part of that. It's The Last of Us, not the clickers, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're not selling you on the zombies. They're selling you on the personal drama. So when you get moments like where they go to the zoo and they see like a giraffe who's still there, which is directly adapted from the game,
yep,
and they kind of meme around with it and feed it leaves, it's cute, you know? Yeah. Like, it's one of those moments that like really lets you sink in that, hey, everything is kind of taken over, but there's still something here.
Right.
It's not like something like The Walking Dead, where so much of, because I'm basing most of my Walking Dead stuff on the Telltale games, because that's most of the Walking Dead media that I've consumed, mm-hmm, where so much of that game felt like it really just wanted to be like everything sucks, and like we never really got to see a ton of scenes of like showing the beauty of some of these situations. And unlike with this show, where for one thing it's obviously stunning because it's HBO and Warner gave this a big budget because they thought it was going to be a big hit, which they were right, but so much of it is built around the premise of how can we make this look as pretty as possible. There's also a moment in the second game that I'm thinking of where Ellie and Joel, there's like a flashback sequence where they go to like a space museum or whatever, and they're kind of memeing around there, and we get like a bunch of really cool moments with them. And it's like, it feels like this show is like, yes, the situation sucks, but it never feels so like, obviously it's a downer show because of the ending, but like, it always feels like it's keeping that sense of levity, which I'll get to with the characters in a bit, but I've always just loved how this show looks, how it portrays the apocalypse. I've always thought it's really interesting.
I do like the positives, you know, thrown in with Well, obviously it's Apocalypse, so there's, you know, quite a few negatives, but...
Negative one, society has crumbled. Negative two, no McDonald's.
Dang it! Well, I guess Ronald can't get it from the back anymore, so...
Well, on the account that he's dead.
Oh my lord, Ronald McClicker.
I'm just imagining, like, a clicker... Yeah. With, like, the Ronald uniform, but, like, when his floor eyes, like, blocking his eyes, it's, like, red. Like, it's like his hair. It's, like, consumed him. Oh, my God.
Oh, good Lord.
Awful.
That's a mod waiting to happen. Please.
Guys, I know we're not going to get Last of Us 3 until 2030, but, like, guys, hear me out.
Yeah.
Clicker McDonald's.
I mean, at least we're getting it, Valve. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Looking at you, Gaben. But anyways, getting away from that. Oh, and looky here, there's an ad for The Last of Us on the wheel. That's cool.
Oh my god, it's like it knows.
Crazy. All right, well, let's transition a little bit. Let's talk about, like, the tone and why it works.
Yeah.
I love the tone. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too.
I think it was... It's a perfect balance between the good and the bad, because you have those moments of... Like you were saying, you have those moments where it's not, you know, you're kind of transitioning away, like the giraffe scene. That's one of my favorite parts of the game, and I'm glad it was referenced in the show too. But you still have, like, the tenseness of, you know, when there's actually, like, there's action going on, or if there's, you know, there's
right.
some kind of conflict. But it doesn't, like, it's not like Whiplash. It's very soft transitions into, you know, each one where it just feels natural. It feels good in that sense.
No,
it's
yeah.
kind of a weird way of saying it, but, you know,
I think why it feels so good is that there's a lot of moments in this show where the characters are allowed to have little wins.
Yeah.
Which is really important for a show like this to keep the momentum going, because unless, like, you don't give a character like Ellie the ability to, like, you know, take a shower after however long she hasn't been able to, or Joel
mm-hmm.
to actually be able to find, like, a car or whatever, like, yeah. you need those little wins to make it feel like your characters are making progress. Because one of the biggest problems that I've seen in Apocalypse media is that it really sometimes wants to focus on, like, how bad things could be, and they get really scared when characters actually feel like they're about to make progress. I forgot the name of the movie, but there's a movie that I watched last semester for my college, because I took a whole class about a media that talked about atomic bombs and wastelands and apocalypse.
Okay.
This is what the funds go to. Great class, wonderful professor.
Yeah.
And we watched a movie that was essentially a glorified PSA about what would happen if the United States got hit by a nuclear missile. And it's, like, takes place in, like, Podunk, Iowa or whatever, like, you know, like the Heartland or whatever. Yeah. And the whole movie is structured that after the nuke hits, essentially the characters aren't really making that much forward momentum. Like, they're just kind of, like, sitting around, standing around going, life sucks. And, like, we cut to the hospital where, like, it's, like, one of the last, like, bastions of humanity. And, like, mm-hmm. the one doctor who we follow, like, goes slowly insane. And, like, the reason they did that is because they wanted to describe this as realistically as possible, and also because it was a PSA and they wanted to scare the crap out of people of thinking that nuclear war is a good idea. But I think that movie largely fails from a structural standpoint because it never feels like we're making forward momentum in the plot. And this thing is only like 90 minutes long, but it feels like it's 2 hours. Like,
yeah.
With a show like this, you need moments like for these characters actually feel like they're getting something out of it, or just moments of levity. Like, there's a reason why we love Ellie, because despite the fact that this is a really sucky situation, she's making puns like half the time.
Yeah.
And, like, listen, we know me well enough by now that that's just like that. That's a character I'm just naturally going to, like, you know, like, love.
Yeah.
But we get to watch a character like Joel also react to that and eventually kind of break down and like have those little wins. We get to see them change their dynamic. They don't stay the same throughout the whole show.
Right.
That's why I love the tone, is that it, while the action and the danger feels relatively consistent, the characters are allowed to really build themselves up and like be something different, you know?
Yeah.
Also, because when it wants to be sad, it's really sad. Episode 3, where it has Joel's friends and they form a relationship at the end of the world, they spend like a whole hour just doing that one little side episode because they wanted to do it. And it's tragic, man. Like, they totally went into the details of how someone's psyche would be affected by only sharing, like, by being alone in your house for so long, and then someone magically like shows up on one of your traps and like, oh, well, guess I'm in love with them now. Like,
right.
It's a very wonderfully done, like, thought exercise on what would make the apocalypse interesting. And it doesn't end with them getting eaten by clickers. It ends with them dying in each other's arms. Like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what makes this show and this tone so strong, is that it never feels like the answer to every character dying is like, clickers got them, or like, they get shot.
Right.
It's like, there's a lot of nuance here. Mm-hmm. That's what's lovely about it.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree, and that's a tough act to follow, so.
Well, try it. Figure it out. What you got? Come on, Snickers. I'm all ears. I'm sure there's something else you'll like about the tone. What do you got?
I got my thoughts out. No, yeah. I really did. I really did get my thoughts out.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were like, I'll do something.
No.
What?
Lightning clicker.
What would that even look like? He's a car.
I don't know. Somebody out there needs to draw the car anatomy of that. How that would work.
I did draw Jesus as a car one time.
Yes, you did.
In like high school. I think I made him like a sedan. I don't know why. I made him like, the car had the beard, and he had like a little robot arm to hold up a Bible. That was the pitch.
That was a pitch.
Listen, it's one of my finest works.
Alrighty.
Cars 4, Lightning turns to Catholicism.
Oh, boy.
Mater, what are you talking about? You weren't there when Jesus died on the cross. You was there too, McQueen. Mater's tall tales.
The Mater's Tall Tales, the birth of Christ.
Actually, there's only three wise men. You were there too, McQueen.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I just love the segue of you was there too, McQueen. It's so funny.
Oh man.
Oh boy.
Wow. What a sidetrack. Moving right along. Let's talk about Ellie and how her how her actress isn't awful. Okay. You go first. You go
okay.
first.
Okay. So there's a lot of discourse around who they chose to play Ellie for a few reasons, mainly because her body shape is different than the one in the game. Like, I understand that. Like Ellie, like, oh no, the video game character doesn't look like the character in the show. Uh-oh, bad show, 0 out of 10. Like, I think that's where some of this is. Like, yes, Ellie in the show looks very different, but guess what? So does Joel. Like, I'm sorry. Like, what is this take? Like Pedro and Joel look kind of, but also they're very different. Like, I don't look at Joel and go, that's Joel. I look at him and go, that's Pedro Pascal. Like, I'm sorry.
I mean, like, yeah, but I think Pedro Pascal was he was a good choice, obviously. Both of them.
Yeah, because he's played father figures his whole career.
Right.
He's gonna do it again in Fantastic Four. He already did it in Mandalorian. He did it here. Did he do it in Game of Thrones? I don't remember.
James Marsden would have been a good pick too.
Yeah, no. As much as I love James Marsden, I gotta say, I don't think he would be a good Joel.
Ben Schwartz as Ellie.
The last of Sonic. I hate. It's the last Sonic movie. It's a Last of Us crossover now. Who cares?
Please.
But not? back to Ellie, because wow.
That's what happens, man. Listen, man.
I think she killed it. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know, like, I'm not as attached to the games as, like, you are, so that's probably where you're coming from. But well, I just think off of pure mannerisms.
Yeah.
Like, I think she really was selling what I think Ellie as a character is, which, as cliche as it is to say, the hope for the future. Because, you know, every apocalypse story needs an older, disgruntled man who lost a daughter, and now he has to learn how to have a found family again.
Right.
Sometimes with a daughter, sometimes with the son. Shake a stick at it. It happens a lot. But I think, to Ellie's credit, I think her character was very well done. Obviously, that's because the way this show is formatted is that we get a lot of flashback sequences when we least suspect them. So we really get to feel like we know what Ellie's deal was. Like, obviously, like, before she gets, you know, roped into this whole adventure with Joel and Tess. But I also think that her sense of humor saves the show from feeling monotonous.
Right.
Like, and I think her actress sold that very well. I'm going to bring it up again, but the fact that she's like half the time making puns is so stupid. But you know what? It is the apocalypse. You would try to do anything to make that kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Like, she has a lot of visual gags that makes her humor not just the pun girl. Like, she has the little moment where it's like episode two where they're at the hotel and it's like all flooded. And like, she goes up to the counter and like rings the bell and goes, "Hello, room service. I would like so and so." Like, it's a stupid, it's weird, but like, she's quirky like that, you know? It's a very interesting dynamic. And like, I know she gets a lot of hate online. I get that. I just don't see it. Like, I think she totally nailed the character. I think her emotional range in the show is really good. I always think about that death scream that she gives in, like, one of the last few episodes where she's killing the guy who kidnapped her, and she just keeps stabbing and stabbing and stabbing and just gets so guttural with it, kind of like Hugh Jackman's Logan in that sense. Like, I don't see the hate, but alas, I am just one man who has not played the game, but you have played the game.
Yes.
Enlighten us.
Well, I'm in the boat where I don't dislike the choice. That's not what I'm saying. Because at first, yes, I was like, okay, that's a little, you know, it's kind of an odd choice. But once
she looks a little younger.
Right. But when you watch the show, you know, it really all comes down to acting. And, like, you know, just selling the character. And, yes, she does it very well. You know, the comic relief and everything is great. The serious moments are great. Everything is great. The performance, the whole nine.
But
I don't know. I just kind of wish she looked a little bit more like the game. But that's it. Acting.
But, like,
wise,
in what regard? What about the game you wish was more like it?
I don't know, because I think Pedro Pascal looks a lot like Joel. At least in my opinion, I think so. I mean, I'm looking at the poster right here. Like, yeah, I can totally see that. But her, I don't know. I'm not saying that her acting was awful, and I'm really glad she made the part, right? And got the part, because it's phenomenal. But, you know, at the very start, I was kind of iffy about it, but I'm at a point where I can look past it, you know, and, you know, just see the acting and the character, you know, come out, you know, like that. So, I don't know. I just kind of wish she looked a little bit more like the game. But
like an adult?
Yeah.
Like, because I think that's where a lot of people get mad, is that she has very much a baby face.
Yes.
Compared to how she looks in the game. Like, in the game, she looks like she's like canonically, is she what, 15, 16, something like that?
Around
like
there.
Like, she's like in her mid teens, not like a full teenager. But in the game, she could very much pass for like a young adult, 14. If that makes sense. Because 14 and the
Yeah.
Okay, then like, then I like, because to me it's like you're marketing this character as 14. How many 14-year-olds do you know looks like the characters from the game? Like let's keep it a buck here. Like, I don't think that's a very like, you know, like that's a very like, that's a narrow pool if that's where we're gonna go down.
Sure.
And I think so much of this is because essentially you're selling the show on the premise of Joel and Ellie working together. You need that chemistry, and I think having this actress work so well with Pedro Pascal is part of why the show works so well. And also just from a visual sense, mm-hmm. I kind of like that Ellie is shorter than what she was in the game, mainly mm-hmm. because just from like a pure visual sense, it makes Joel more important from when we're looking at him, because he's obviously the adult, and it makes Ellie more, it makes us more worried for Ellie because we see her as more of a kid.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't run into the, oh my God, what was like the damsel character from like Resident Evil 4? Oh, I'm forgetting her name, with Ashley or something like that.
Yeah,
that, like Ashley. Leon Kennedy had like to pretend, had to like defend or whatever.
Yeah,
it never runs into that line where like Ashley is like what, 18 or 16 in that game, and like we're just kind of looking at her going like, dude, like figure it out. Like we look at Ellie and we go, this is a kid, a capable kid, but a kid. And also, again, just from a visual like point, I kind of like her having more of a baby face. It makes her more of this innocent character that we have to protect, despite the fact that she was reading Playboys or whatever in like the back of the truck that one time. Like,
right.
And again, like, listen, I'm a comic book guy. Like, I obviously eat and breathe Marvel and DC, as we've learned. And I've seen this argument like a ton of times. I'm like, oh, this actor doesn't look like the character from the comics, that means he's bad. Or, oh, this guy looks like the character from the comics, and that means she's good. But like,
right. And that's not where I stand on that, where it's right. Like, oh, if you don't look like the character, oh no, I'm not watching your show. Womp womp. You know, that's
womp womp.
That's not at all where I stand on this. I just wish that she looked a little bit more, but I don't hate the character at all.
No, sure. I just personally like what the show did, and I think making her more of a baby face to me is more interesting. Sure. And obviously some of that is biased because I watched the show first. So like that is just where my allegiances lie in terms of how I view this world and these characters. But like, fine. I just do generally think that if you're going to have more of an like hope of the future, innocent type of character, mm-hmm. I think having her like look different from everyone else in the show, because for the most part, we don't see a ton of other kids in the season. Obviously there's the kid who turns into a zombie, but right. he's a lot younger than her. So it works. And then there's like the teenage girl that like is running around like the place where Joel's brother is at or whatever. And obviously there's her girlfriend who then dies, but you know, I think having her stand out in this regard is also very strong, because if you make her older, you mistake her for other characters. Like, she looks like she could actually like fit in, but the whole point of Ellie is that she stands out. Like, I don't know. Like, that's just the way that I kind of just see it. Yeah. But also it's like, I don't know, man. She makes funny puns. I'm willing to forgive a lot for that.
Right. Okay.
She's like me for real, for real.
Yes.
Yes. No, she is. And like, yeah, we're yeah. not, this yeah, is not
there's
a,
no, there's no debate on that. No, I'm just thinking more about it. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of characters, we got a good one coming up next. Joel.
Oh my God. Billy himself.
Oh yeah.
I've been yapping for a while. You should go.
Yeah. Well, I love Joel as just a, you know, in the games and in the show too, where, yeah, you've got this really tragic story of like, oh yeah, he's, you know, he's got a kid and
dies,
right? But I mean, dies just right there, and it's, you know, he's
first app, like first 20 minutes or whatever, right.
And I mean, that is just a it's one heck of a way to start, but mm-hmm. You know, just kind of seeing the growth, you know, where he's, you know, he doesn't have his daughter anymore, but he meets Ellie and, you know, he starts becoming that father figure. I love it. And I I do think Pedro Pascal was a great choice for this, because like you said, he's been playing a lot of dad characters, and and he's really good at it. He's really good at it. I think he's a great adaptation.
I hope he is.
What?
Well, no, it's like, okay, he did The Mandalorian, but obviously Baby Grogu, like that's that there. He's going to do Mr. Fantastic this year, and I think there's going to be a kid in that, Franklin, so he's going to do that. He's just been playing this type of character in different fonts his like whole mainstream career.
It was a great choice. I think he sells a lot of the dynamics very well, and I think he's a great adaptation. I don't know, quicker, you know, more dumbed down thoughts. You're the one that goes a little bit more in depth, but I really like this choice, and his performance was excellent.
I agree. I know, as much as I joke that when I look at Joel in the show, I just see Pedro Pascal, but that's also just because, like, I watch a lot of things, so I just look at Pedro Pascal and I go, yep, that's Mando. Like, yep, there he is. Like, that, there's Joel. Like, there's father figure McGee. But also because
I do like when characters are, you know, it's like a famous actor, right, is playing a character. I think it's very important where you can kind of see through the actor. You know, that it's not like,
sure,
oh, that's just Pedro Pascal. Okay, cool. You know, yeah.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, I get because that. Obviously it's, yeah, I just want to throw that in there that, you know, and I think Joel does that very well, or Pedro does that with Joel very well.
Yeah, because also just because it's like, you know, again, Hollywood's a copycat industry. They see one thing work and they're just going to apply it to a bunch of other things. It's why RDJ played Iron Man so many times, because like he nailed it in one. But with Joel specifically, what I do enjoy about his character is that, to me, he embodies the themes of the show very well. What I was talking about earlier with, we're going to take a good, hard look at the apocalypse and really see how that would affect someone.
Yeah.
And I love how the show ends with him doing the wrong thing. And we'll get more into that with the ending, but it feels like the show is building you up with his character going, oh, he doesn't really like Ellie. He doesn't want to answer his questions. At one point he goes, you ask a lot of questions or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we slowly get to see him come around, you know? And obviously, like, that's a very common trope too. If I remember correctly, there's a great video essay that someone did about The Walking Dead Telltale Season 2. Where they brought this up, where it's called the datification of games, if that makes sense. It started with the Last of Us game. There's been a bunch of other stuff too. BioShock did it, if I remember correctly. God of War kind of does it with that child character. It's just a very common trope. But man, just because something is common doesn't mean it's not effective, you know? And what I love about Joel is that it feels like he's not the stalwart, like, kind of like stereotypical hero, you know, and the same reason why I love the characters from Stranger Things, because it feels like, for at least for the first couple seasons, they were breaking all the archetypes of 80s characters. What I love about Joel is that he has his darker moments, but you always understand why he's doing it. At his core, he's a broken man who lost his daughter and doesn't want to go through that pain again. And us really being able to zoom in on it is wonderful. I think Pedro sold it very well, as much as I joke that he is just like doing the Mandalorian, but zombies this time. I think his performance is obviously very different. And I think he gets a lot of smack for I've said it a lot this episode too. He's America's dad kind of right now with the characters he plays.
Right.
But
America's dad. That's great.
I mean, it's a goofy take, but like, and I'm sure there's another more eloquent way of saying it, but
but he's not American, Dad.
Good morning.
Do you know American Dad's coming back to Fox?
I did see that. That's actually pretty huge.
Yeah.
Finally. Good for American Dad. Fun fact, better than Family Guy, but we're not ready for that conversation.
Dude,
but
it is so much better.
It's so funny. I start crying laughing when I see like Roger like pretend to be something.
Right.
This is supposed to be the most elite school of clowning taught by the greatest professor. It's Roger, isn't it?
I think Modern American Dad is way funnier than Modern Family Guy, which is just, you know, here's a stupid thing.
Holy crap, Lois, this reminds me of listening to the Last of Us episode of the Double After Hours podcast.
That's so real.
gotta get back on track here, because right. just like Family Guy, we do a lot of cutaway gags.
Yes, we do. Oh man, this is even worse than the time we talked about 80s music. Wait,
oh yeah, that one got buried in the car. Hey, guys, it's gonna happen eventually. Give we'll it there. Some time. I don't know, guys. I'm not gonna promise you a date. I'm just gonna say it's gonna happen eventually. But anyway,
yep.
But
keep it generic.
No. Yeah. No, but I love Joel. I think he did Mr. Pedro did a wonderful job. And I really can't wait to see what season two does with him further, because we ended season one on the note of he lied to Ellie about why he took him out of the hospital. And obviously it's in the game, but I really can't wait to see how we're actually going to grapple with that. I think it's going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome.
Love him.
All right, well, let's go back to the wheel here. And okay, let's talk about how the show differs from the game.
Yeah, this is gonna be your segment.
Yeah, there's a few that I've noticed, like well, the game kind of takes place in 2013, because of course that's when the game came out, but the show, you know, is a little bit more like 2023.
Yeah, yes. Because the outbreak happened in 2003.
Yeah, so it's 20,
so they pushed it up
instead of 10, which I mean, it's okay, I guess. Not really fine. A whole lot has happened.
Well, 10 years, a lot of things happen, a lot of different presidents, a lot of movies.
Quite a few movies. Yes. So yeah, that was one of the main ones. I mean, there is with the fungus, or there's a bit of difference between there, with the way it spreads, because it's kind of like a network in the ground.
Yeah,
and
kind of like how mushrooms operate in the real world.
Yeah, and they kind of didn't do that. They did it like another way, and which is not awful. I don't think that's like a deal breaker. Bet show not follow the game. <Get it>! No. Like, it's just kind of minor changes like that, that it's like, okay, that's not really it's not the end of the world.
Oh my god. You think you're so funny.
Now I'm the comedy queen.
Oh god. Is this what I've become?
Yes.
Christ.
Yeah. So I mean, those are kind of the ones that I really noticed. I'm sure there's a few more like really minute details. It's like, oh, okay. They went right instead of left in the fifth episode.
It's oh different. My god! Stop the presses!
Yeah, stop the presses. No more show. Season two canceled. Yeah, no.
Time for more Big Mouth.
But yeah, it's that's about it. At least that I mean, noticed.
I haven't played the game, so I can't speak too personally on it, but what I have noticed is that, at least from what it feels like, is that the show was able to go on sidetracks a little bit more than the game was willing to. And sure. I brought this up earlier with episode 3 and how that episode was original content for the show, largely because they had the budget, they had the time, and because if I remember...
It's a little more backstory too, I've noticed. There was a bit more than what the game had. At least the original release, I don't know.
Maybe mainly because the way that Neil Druckmann, one of the head writers of Last of Us, this is like kind of his thing, yep, along with a couple other guys at Naughty Dog. Crazy how these are the same developers who gave us Crash Bandicoot.
I love Naughty Dog. They need to make more stuff, Naughty Dog. What are you doing?
They're sitting on something. I don't know. Didn't they announce something at Game Awards? I don't remember. But
they said buy our games and tell your friends and make us lots of loot.
Oh my god, I miss Naughty Dog. I miss them.
Yeah.
I mean, but anyway, but my point is that
good stuff.
Oh yeah. But my point is that because of the nature of the show and the fact that this was Neil Druckmann's second time going around, mm-hmm, he's just naturally going to have a couple of different ideas for how he wanted to do things. Obviously, the big strokes are largely the same, sure, but from what I understood, because I listened to the companion podcast they released back in the day, mm-hmm. like 2 years ago, which is, I guess, back in the day, whatever. But like
back in my day, we didn't have podcasting. We had not for us.
Ah, yeah.
we had Redacted.
The radio show that does not get mentioned. But, you know, if I remember correctly, he stated a lot that he wanted to do a couple things differently. Like, not because, like, he thought what he did in the game was bad, but because he wanted, it's naturally like an adaptation. A couple things are going to be changed. And he wanted to go more into detail about how some of this actually worked. It's why we got those sequences where the scientists are like discovering what the heck the virus actually is, because that's something he's always really wanted to do. I would recommend listening to that podcast series a lot. It's a great in-depth look at what kind of decisions they were making with this show.
Yeah.
And also it gave my professor, Michael, and he always uses this phrase with characters that he describes. It actually applies to Ellie, the F you hold me rule, which for those of you who don't know what that means, it basically is a way of how to write a 15-year-old where you're striving for independence, but they still need someone to be dependent on. Sure. That's a podcast thing that he remembered that I've been told about my characters multiple times. So that's why I bring it up. Also because maybe he's listening, maybe he's not. Hi, Michael. But hi, bud.
Hey, buddy.
That's what this is. But no, I think a lot of the changes from what I observed were there only to heighten the story, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, to get more in depth, to like kind of give it a little more weight. Obviously, like some of it is different, like the way the Flora works is different or whatever, and like now it's like in the ground, it's more of a hive mind, like sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. That didn't bother me. I mean, again, like, that's partially because I'm not as attached to the property as something like, you know, Superman or Spider-Man. For when you change something, I'm naturally just going to get, I have the possibility of getting more miffed on it. Right. So, like, that's, because I know, like, I have the tendency of being like, you changed the thing!
I mean, I'm sure it probably pissed off a lot of purists, but
probably.
To me, it's fine. I have no issues with it, so, you know.
Nah,
stay mad, haters.
Stay mad, gang. Oh no, the fake zombies got their backstory slightly tweaked. Uh-oh.
There's probably some haters out there missing do-do-do-do. So, you know.
No, they're not. Let's not make that up.
No haters? Okay.
No, nah.
All right.
But alas.
I hate that intro. Can you tell?
It was pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
We had it for 36 episodes.
36 too many. dear Lord. All right, so let's move right along here. We're at the last thing on the wheel. We're going to talk about the ending, why it was the right decision, and why it works.
So I know we've been kind of dancing around it for a bit here, but for those of y'all, for whatever reason, who didn't watch the show, mm-hmm. but you're listening to this, thanks, by the way. But the way the show ends is that Ellie's character essentially has an immunity to being bit by the clickers, because when her mom was during childbirth, the clicker bit her mom while she was fighting off one of the clickers. And because of that, she was able to gain an immunity to them while she was giving birth to the child. Obviously, the mother didn't gain that immunity. She got shot in the head, but Ellie did. So the whole plot hinges on getting Ellie to a secure location, develop an actual cure, and they finally eventually get to that location, but it's revealed that in order for that to actually happen, Ellie has to die. And we just spent this whole show with Pedro Pascal learning about how to be a dad again, and he's not going to let a second daughter die on his watch. So he goes full Rambo, full John McClane, and takes out everyone in that hospital, even the leader of the Fireflies, Tessa, I'm getting my characters mixed up, yeah. But the leader of the Fireflies, who wants all of this to happen, and she says nothing's going to change by you doing this, but you know, he wants to be a dad. And right. Ellie wakes up and like, he basically says that turns out there's a lot more people with your specific immunity to the clickers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Ellie really isn't buying it. And the show ends with one last scene of them going back to like the camp, and what was it, Wyoming, with Joel's brother.
Yep.
And she asks, like, you got to swear that you're telling the truth on this one. And obviously, Joel lies. And that's just how the show ends. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because the way this show has been building, this is the answer. It's a sucky answer, but also in the sense of it, again, feels like a very nuanced, realistic take on the apocalypse, because even though we could have possibly ended it all right there, Joel is too insecure about his emotions that he's going to make the play that he thinks is right. And we don't have to agree with it, but we spent a whole show understanding his thought process and understanding his logic and watching him open up about his former daughter, Sarah. And we saw that come to play. I think it's a wonderful ending. I think it's so well done. I think it's so cool. I obviously, it leads to tension in the next season, the next game, which is what I want from my ending. If we're going to do a consistent kind of series, like a franchise or whatever, I want the ending of one thing to lead into the next and how that tension builds to create the next thing. And that's what this largely becomes.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with a lot of that. I think it was very well done. Great example of a cliffhanger. Good Lord.
Ooh.
I mean, unless you've played the game. You know. As for show, though, you know, because I haven't played the game in a minute, but... And sometimes I suffer from goldfish memory, so, you know, that happens too. Crazy, I know. What's my name again? No. But
nah.
Yeah. I'm just full of the dad jokes today. But yeah. No, I agree with all of that. I really don't have a lot to add. You pretty much said it all.
Darn, I keep doing that.
Yeah, it's magic, Joel. It's magic. I've been waiting to say that one. For fans of Brine Sauce Joel, you'll get that one.
Thank God.
But yeah, no, I think it was a really great way to put a, you know, kind of a cliffhanger, and cannot wait for season two. So I'll have to...
Heck yeah, and we're gonna have a whole episode about that when that ends. Yeah. So give us a couple weeks for us to watch it.
Right. I want it now. You're gonna do by episode analysis.
No, we're not doing that.
Yes, you are. Or I'm unsubscribing. Nope.
Thanks, Angry Murray, or whatever your character is.
Angry Murray?
I don't know, man. I'm not a good name for like an angry fan.
Bill Murray.
Bill, well, yeah, he was so angry about Ghostbusters 3, it never happened.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll go with Bill Murray.
I can't wait to rename every angry person to Bill Murray.
Amen. It's the way to go.
Speaking of Ghostbusters, I do have a quick story because I was thinking about Bill Murray.
Okay.
So one time when I was watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I had an Uber driver take me from the theater back to my dorm. And I was mentioning, oh yeah, Bill Murray's in the movie or whatever, and he wasn't that good. And he's like, you know, and my Uber driver's like, and he's like the most millennial looking man that you've ever met in your life. Like full beard, glasses. He looks like he's going to start singing Coldplay at me. Like, full millennial.
Okay.
And he looks at me and goes, you know, I met Bill Murray once. And I was like, really? And well, what happened is that he was in Chicago with a friend or whatever, and he was going to a Second City show. And for those of y'all who don't know what Second City is, it's the improv troupe thing that a lot of people go to in Chicago.
Yeah.
They teach classes, and it's basically one of those direct pipelines where if you're in Second City, good chance you might be on SNL. It's very much one of those stepping stones. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, so what was it like? And he goes, well, let me tell you a story. So, like, he basically what he did is that he pretended to be, like, Bill Murray's friend in order to get his autograph. Like, apparently he was some random friend, and it worked. And the thing that he described about Bill Murray that was so strange is that when I shook his hand, I saw that was a hard-working man's hand. It felt like it. It had the grip. It had the... I was like... Okay. And then he's like, and when I shook Dan Aykroyd's hands, those were the softest hands that I've ever touched in my whole life. I'm like, okay.
I mean, he's not entirely wrong. I can see that.
What, have you shaken Dan Aykroyd's hands?
I've not shaken his hands, but I can totally see them being very soft hands, yes. And Bill Murray's got like working. He's got working man hands. Yeah,
how much he worked to ruin his career.
I did one too many Garfields.
What do you mean? Garfield 3 is just around the corner, man.
Garfield, Tale of Two Kitties.
Wow, that movie's bad.
Pinnacle of his career, man.
Peak.
Man, I haven't watched that movie in a minute. Oh, boy.
I haven't watched that movie since I was a kid.
Well, guess what? Next week, Tale of Two Kitties.
I really don't want to do that.
One of these days, you will see us ripping apart Bill Murray's masterpiece.
Garfield and Garfield Tale of Two Kitties. We gotta do both of them. It's very important.
Oh, yeah.
But speaking of what else is important, because that's kind of the end of our show here, ladies and gentlemen. Because we've been going for like an hour or something. We've been going for a bit. Mm-hmm. And first of all, thank you so much for listening. It's obviously a pleasure doing this. For those of y'all who want to check out what we're doing, we are on Apple. We're on Spotify. We're on Amazon. We're on iHeart. We're on a ton of other stuff. You can check our descriptions below because we have linked to our RSS page, which has the links of every single podcast platform we're on. And honestly, we're probably on a few others that we probably don't know. So just look up the Double After Hours podcast and wherever.
We're on a couple lists.
You listen. We really are. Like, I occasionally check that and I go, like, we just added to new things. Like, for what? Like, I didn't know we had listeners on Deezer, but I guess we do. But cool, I guess. But I highly recommend going to that RSS page and seeing what podcast index or the podcast platform you use, because most likely we're probably on it. In terms of social medias, we have an Instagram, a Facebook, and a TikTok where we notify you when episodes are up. We give you highlights. We give you all a bunch of stuff, funny things that we might work on from side to side. Check those out if you want to be the most up to date on what's going on with us. I highly recommend checking those. We have all those linked in the description below. But again, we have an Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, all by the same name, the Double After Hours Podcast. If you see kind of like that night mic, you will probably know that's us. In terms of what's coming out next week, I'm going to keep it a buck. I don't know. We've been throwing out a couple ideas. We might be doing
Garfield
UHF.
Garfield Tale of Two Kitties.
We have to do the first one first.
Garfield 1.
Are we doing Garfield 1?
Yes.
Oh, God. I was going to say, hey, we got to talk about the Avatar movies this year, but okay, sure. Garfield. Okay. I guess we're doing Garfield next week.
Amen.
Awesome. Wonderful. Because what? We're going to have... No, there's time. No, I got time.
Yeah, we'll,
but
we'll have the Bill Murray special. It's fine.
Yeah, no. We'll talk about Garfield. I don't know why, but...
It's funny. Mentioned it.
Sure.
Why not?
Why not? I guess it's Garfield next week.
Heck,
it's
yeah.
Arby's night.
Yeah, it's but... so Arby's. Dude, Garfield and Arby's hand in hand.
Oh, shut up. He likes Italian food. We all know that. That's the thing. He likes lasagna.
Watching Garfield's like the aftermath of Arby's.
Shut up. Oh, my God. What are we saying?
Magic. We're saying magic.
Just like Garfield.
Amen.
It's like Bill Murray's wonderful movie, Garfield, but I think that's all we got to say. I've been Charlie Robinson. Follow our socials, subscribe to our pages, share us around. It means a lot, and I'll see y'all next time.
Oh my gosh.
You're Garfield? Is that what you're going to say?
Garfield Grasser.
Kill me. You forgot to tell me you had a new cat for 2 months.
That's
I don't want to hear any of this cat obsession.
That's true. Two months. Yeah, that was something. Anyways, I'm Aaron Grasser. Stay tuned for Garfield Bill Murray Miss next week.
It's going to be Stay great.
Up. Don't see y'all later.
Thank you for listening to the Double After Hours podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. If you want to see a full list of our platforms, be sure to check out our page at rss.com, linked in the description below. We've got social media pages featuring highlights on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, with links below. The best way to help us grow is by sharing us wherever you can, or by telling a friend, family member, coworker, or whoever by word of mouth. It goes a long way. Thanks for listening, and staying after hours.
Joel? Did you know diarrhea is hereditary?
What?
Yeah. It runs in your genes.